Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day, from finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process. Our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Jonathan Kestenbaum, who is the Managing Director at AMS. Jonathan, really great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, same. I'm excited about the conversation. We're going to be jumping into kind of the future of staffing and talking deeply about AI, some of the legal implications. To kick things off, Jonathan, could you give a little background about who you are and how you got into the staffing industry?
Yes. So I am a licensed attorney by education, but I've been an entrepreneur in the work tech space my whole career. Started my career, I built a reverse auction system, which was essentially for tutors. So students would ask for help and tutors would bid against each other, ultimately helping students get help at the cheapest price. What I thought I was building at the time was an ed tech company. I learned pretty quickly I was building a work tech company, helping tutors get jobs. A number of staffing firms on the East Coast were interested in leveraging the reverse auction for their contract staffing business to get higher margins. I ended up selling the company in 2012. And then I met Gene Holtzman, who's the CEO of Mitchell Martin, which is an IT healthcare staffing firm in the New York area. And we co-founded an organization called Talent Tech Labs, which at the time was meant to be a venture fund to invest in work tech companies, but evolved pretty quickly into a research firm. Because in an effort to get companies to take us seriously as investors, we would write about trends in work tech. And then we'd get calls from heads of talent and CEOs of staffing firms saying, what does this work tech stuff mean to me? And ultimately built a research firm, which, you know, we exited. And I've spent my career evaluating, you know, either building work tech companies as an entrepreneur, evaluating work tech companies for heads of talent, CEOs of staffing firms. I know every feature, functionality, revenue model that exists in the space. And I always joke that, you know, they're always the first, the only, the greatest. And, and meanwhile, you know, you get pretty cynical over time.
You're like you're the seventh first.
Yeah, exactly. But it's I'd say the most exciting time to be in the space. I mean, I've been through the social revolution, the, you know, move from on-prem servers to SaaS-based servers, the mobile shift. You know, this drive with AI is, I think, the most exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be transformational. It already is. And one of the things that you created that I've waited for, looked at for years was the Talent Tech ecosystem, that infographic. I remember the first time I saw that thing. And I think you've probably invented categories within the space over the years.
Absolutely have. Yeah. And those things have become budget categories, which is crazy.
Yeah. What led you to that? I mean, for those of you that don't know, there's a Talent Tech ecosystem. I don't know if that's exactly what it's called, but it's an infographic that shows you all of the HR tech and all of the different categories. And it's grown massively over the years. And what the number of tools in that infographic, how it's wild.
I think what happened was, what I kind of learned over time was the technology vendors would speak feature functionality. And like you'd be on, and it depended on who you were on a call with, you know, but if you're on a call with a founder or even, you know, someone on the technology team, like they want to brag about this feature does this, right? But the buyers of these technologies, they talk business problems. And so we had to come up with a way to translate the noise between feature functionality and business problems. And so, and if you ask the vendors what problems they solve, they'd be like, we solve them all. They're either we do it now or it's on our roadmap. We're going to do that for you as soon as you sign up, right? So this gave us an opportunity to kind of be like, well, what do you do today? What are the features that you have today? And if we were to look across all the companies that do that, well, can we roll that into a category that solves a business problem? You know, maybe it's referrals or maybe it's video interviewing. And that's broadly what we did. And really that marketing, it was really a marketing exercise, was meant to get more companies to take us seriously as investors at the time. And, you know, it really did accomplish very much that. Like, we got companies to tell us they wanted to be on the ecosystem, or death threats because, you know, they thought they were in the wrong category. And we got, you know, heads of talent and CEOs of staffing firms saying, hey, which one's the right one for me?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. It's funny to think about all of the background into that. I didn't realize it started from that perspective. On your point on the way tech companies describe their product versus the customers, I remember hearing about bi-directional SMS messaging. That's what we do. And I'm like, and then you ask their customers, they're like, well, no, they just helped me get a hold of talent. It's like,
no, I mean, like, and over the years, there's been companies that, you know, said, oh, we're not a CRM, we're a TRM, you know, a talent relationship management, you know, instead of a can. And like, what I've learned is it's, you know, you're better off driving into an existing budget category and going after existing spend within these organizations than plotting your own path and creating your own category. It's just too expensive. I mean, just think, like, in practice, the way this plays out is you go to a company and you're like, hey, here's what I do. And will you buy my technology? And generally, organizations budget at the beginning of the budget period for a set of technology. And if you don't fit into a category that they budgeted for, you know, it's very hard for them to find the cash. And when you come in with some made up term of what you do, that, you know, it's not going to fit into an existing category.
Completely fair. Completely fair. So kind of jumping into where the market's at today, and also we're going to dig deep into AI, but why don't we start with, like, where do you see the kind of staffing HR tech market today? And then let's jump into how tech's going to impact that. So.
Yeah. So I think we're at this, like, inflection point. And I used to do this, and you'll probably find it somewhere online. I used to do this talk on AI, and I used to talk about how we have, you know, with machine learning, the ability to do better predictive modeling and matching, but we really can't do conversational or generative tasks. And actually now with generative AI, we can do conversational and generative tasks. And what that means is you have now, for the first time, technologies that go beyond just pure workflow solutions to technologies that are actually able to do tasks that humans did historically. And it's creating a massive opportunity, but also it's incredibly difficult to execute on. If you think about it, historically, if you bought a piece of technology, like a workflow tool to help you get efficiencies within your business, you would have to select the right tool. You'd have to do change management and implement it correctly. And then maybe you'd get adoption, right? Now you have to do those two things, but then this tool is constantly eating at more tasks that your people do. And so you have to constantly redesign the workforce that sits around it. And that's hard. And so, you know, we're going through this really interesting shift of likely, and I'm making up this stat. It's just like a gut feel stat, this one. So something along the lines of 50% of the tasks that we do as folks within the staffing market are going to change. It doesn't mean, by the way, like, I live in an abundant mindset, not a scarcity mindset. Like, my view broadly is, yes, in the short term, it's going to create less opportunity. Like, you know, long term, there's going to be more jobs. I can tell you, like, if you look at myself, like 40% of what I do probably historically has changed. I'm using AI a lot to support me in my job, but that doesn't mean I have 40% more free time. I'm just busy doing more strategic things that I didn't have time to do before.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think in our first conversation, you talked about AI kind of almost commoditizing knowledge work. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about that concept.
Yeah, I like the way I try to, and this actually goes into just the way my brain works and the way I even thought about creating categories around the Talent Tech Labs ecosystem. You know, you look for analogies, either historically or in other industries, to see like what worked, right? And if you think about it, if you look at the Industrial Revolution, which in the Industrial Revolution, you had machines. And machines became the great equalizer of physical labor. And essentially, if you were strong before machines, you were like a hot commodity in a factory. Like, you would get a premium as a worker. Then machines came in and, like, you know, they can get the pipsqueak from down the street to come and do the same labor that the strong guy or girl was doing before. So now what we have is the great equalizer of knowledge work, right? Yeah. So AI agents are going to kind of make us all smart to an extent. And obviously, how you use the tools is unique. And so there's going to be folks that know how to use these tools more meaningfully and take advantage of them more meaningfully, and they'll get more output. But broadly, we're creating what I would call the assembly line of knowledge work. And we're going to be reshuffling the tasks that we do alongside a machine. So if you look at an analogy of what happened in the Industrial Revolution, well, there was significant job loss at the beginning, and then there was, you know, significant abundance in the end and more jobs created. And I think you're going to see the same thing happen now, but even faster, because the technology is evolving even faster. I mean, machines needed to be built, you know, with physical parts and welded together. And this is all zeros and ones.
It's crazy to see how fast. I saw like the knowledge curve on it, and you see it's just a straight hockey stick. We are moving at a pace that is amazing. And when you look at the roles within staffing, you say, and I agree with you, I think some people are like, oh, it's overhyped, it's too much, you know, and I think it might actually be underhyped. I think that's a possibility that people may.
I believe it to be underhyped.
Yeah.
But this is the thing that people miss. It's like, we think of the way staffing works today as like good. Well, yeah. Like, what if actually it actually isn't good now? What if it actually, like, the amount of inefficiency that we have? I mean, like, there's 1,000 places I can point to inefficiency. I mean, just look at redeployment rates of contract labor. I mean, that's like, well, I don't even know what the percentage is today, but it's not significantly better than I was looking at it years ago. It was probably in the 2-3% range back then. I can't imagine the technology has gotten so much better there. But there's a world where, like, every person could have a talent agent that represents them, like Ari from Entourage, you know, like, maybe that's what staffing should have looked like. When you think about the high touch that could bring and the level of service and the amount that could help you as a human find your next role, you think, wow, maybe there is a lot more room here for technology to make this better. And maybe actually this won't just make everything disappear. We'll be able to just provide a much better service than we did before.
In theory, we should be. I mean, I feel like automation was like a step forward, right? Like, it kind of got rid of like the birthday notifications, the check-ins, and some of this basic stuff. But when you look at what AI is going to be able to do, it's really wild. Are there specific areas, processes, or roles within staffing? Which ones do you think are going to change the most?
Listen, I live like 2 years in the future, usually. Yeah. Like, and so, like, it's hard for me sometimes to come back to planet Earth. And some, you know, generally, like, this.
I want to know the teachers in the future, I think.
So I'm looking now, like, I think some of the coolest stuff I'm seeing is with digital twins.
Yes.
It's like essentially like a step beyond an agent, right? Yep. Which is where, like, I can actually train an agent in my style with an understanding of my email addresses, my personalities, the characters that I engage with on a daily basis. And it can act on my behalf as me. There's so many fascinating derivatives that come from that. I mean, everything from, think about a situation where the obvious is, you know, it can communicate with people on behalf of me when I'm sleeping. But I think about other derivatives, like, I'm onboarding a new employee who wants to understand how my team works or what they can leverage. Well, they can communicate with my digital twin who can share with them the information they need to know. Or I'm evolving my role into doing something different. I need someone to take over something that I was historically doing. Well, same thing. They can communicate with my digital twin. And this is stuff that I would have never had time to help someone with. I mean, building onboarding plans for employees was like the bane of my existence. So I think that there's a lot of really interesting new things that we'll be able to do as a result of some of these. But you asked a loaded question with a number of different pieces to it that, you know, what I think sourcing, the way we source talent, how we source talent is the first thing to change. I mean, admin. I mean, if you think about it, I don't think we necessarily will need people scheduling interviews necessarily in the future. I mean, that's all going to be done leveraging technology. I think most administrative tasks within sourcing and recruiting will be done by machines.
Yeah. I second your thought on that. And on the digital twin side, people think that's such a crazy concept, but I'm like, we are, Johnny Ive and OpenAI are probably building a tool that's going to, you're going to be able to send it to meetings. It's going to talk to people. Like, it's
going, I mean, I think GPT-5 is due to come out like any day now. Apparently.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I might regret suggesting that because, you know, you don't know what you read online anymore. But I, from what I hear, it is. But I mean, some of these voice-based AI agents, I mean, it's insane. I could take your voice and, you know, have a conversation with someone. They wouldn't know it's you. And I think what that opens up down the line is issues around identity. And these are like the things that I think it's like, you poke here and then this side, you know, comes out like what, that's what's kind of going to start to happen. We're going to have now a whole identity problem to solve. And I've predicted this early in 24, which is like blockchain makes a comeback around identity, because I'm not particularly excited about the cryptocurrency wave with blockchain. But I think as a solution for identity and knowing that, hey, this is actually David who has interviewed for this role or who I'm communicating with, I think that's where that's going to come back.
It is crazy. The ability to replicate, I replicated my voice the other day, just playing around. I was looking at 11 labs and I did it.
It's fantastic.
I sent a text to my mom and I with the voice and she's like, she didn't know. Yeah. She didn't bother me.
That's awesome.
So, let's jump into kind of the next section here. And you've touched on this a little bit, but there's the legal landmine to kind of just, you know, compliance. What's your perspective, and you probably have a unique one as an attorney, like what are some of the risks that you see that could come about with the future use of AI?
Yeah, so this is like, you know, it's my worst fear, like the legal side of me and my talent acquisition knowledge all coming together into this perfect storm of you're the perfect fit to answer these legal questions. I thought I'd never do legal work again. So the law is basically trying to catch up with the technology. And ultimately what the government is saying is like, look, this is not your get out of jail free card. This is not your yacht in the Cayman Islands that you can cheat on your taxes with. These AI agents need to comply with federal civil rights laws or state laws. And I'm saying that in the context of US legislation, but the same would apply, you know, outside of the US, right? And so they're not necessarily creating new rules that AI has to follow that humans don't. They're creating a framework that you have to follow to make sure that you're not violating existing laws. And that's essentially what the framework that they've created is meant to do, is to force compliance with laws. Now, I think what people always lean to and think about is the bias side of things, which is this technology biased or not? Now, my opinion, that's like 10% of the challenge. You know, that's a binary problem that can be solved using a mathematical model, like is bias being perpetuated in this process? Fine. The harder part is training your entire staff on how to use these technologies in practice. So I'll give you an example. If I was to buy a social search tool that, you know, these aggregators that go out and scrape publicly available information and build profiles of candidates, and I was to create a diversity filter and use that information to hire an employee, I'm violating federal civil rights laws when I do that. So the harder part of this is how do we now train all of our people how to compliantly use AI and then build the checks and balances in place around these systems to do that? And so that's where I think companies are going to stall in their adoption of AI. Aside from just the selection issue that I mentioned earlier and how difficult it's going to be to adopt it, scale, and actually get efficiencies out of it, it's this other challenge of how do I use it compliantly with laws.
Absolutely. And in practice, are you seeing any staffing firms, any corporations where you feel like have a good playbook for that, or do you think it's still being built?
Listen, AMS, we're doing obviously a lot to make sure not only that we have the framework to be able to apply AI meaningfully, but also building in the guardrails to protect the AI that we do have deployed. And then what we're really trying to do is lead the market in AI compliance. Like we've created, you know, an advisory board of folks that are outside the industry that are helping us understand what best in class looks like and hopefully creating some whatever framework that other companies can follow to deploy best in class AI in talent acquisitions. But, you know, we're not the only ones doing great work there. There's a lot of folks. And you know, I would argue also the vendors themselves are trying to stay ahead of this. There's a lot of pretty progressive vendors out there as well.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to jump back over on the use case side just a little bit, because I know you are thinking 2 years ahead, maybe, and probably operating 2 years ahead as well. When it comes to your personal, or I guess professional or personal, like, what are some of the top use cases where you're seeing the biggest leverage for your day-to-day?
Yeah, so we're looking at voice-based AI agents. Typically, those are really effective in high volume or early career kind of situations.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not just voice-based agents, it's text-based, you know, communication. We are looking at building more sophisticated agentic workflows. Trying to think of a good example to give you. So one of the challenges that you're going to find is you have 8 to 12 point solutions that support your processes and staffing, right? Well, each of those point solutions that sits on their own unique data set, their own part of the process, is going to launch their own AI agents. And if you thought it was bad now, it's about to get worse, like candidate experience, hiring manager experience, recruiter experience, because everyone's going to be like in this turf war for whose agent's going to win, and no one's going to have all of the data sitting in one place. And so one of the things that AMS is working on is building what we're calling orchestration technology, which basically allows us to centralize the data from those disparate systems into a data lake, and then actually run AI agents across that to orchestrate tasks as to this task should be done by a human, this task should be done by an AI agent, and you know, start to understand and optimize the process across disparate systems and make the data kind of flow seamlessly. So we're investing a lot of time right now is helping organizations optimize the technology that they have.
Yeah. Well, and also that's really smart. I mean, think about having the standardization of the data. Somebody would want to use AI, want to use automation. And if their data is not good, if you don't have clarity around it, or if you have 14 different tools messaging from it.
100%. It's only as good as the data.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you're helping with customers actually kind of standardizing that, getting it into a data lake, and then actually like the strategic operation on top of it as well.
Yes. Applying AI across that. 100%. Awesome.
That's great. That's great. So jumping back over to the future of work, you compared the future of employment to WeWork and real estate. Can you paint the picture around that a little bit? This was from a previous conversation you and I had.
Yeah. So there's been stats about contract staffing growing, you know, RPO growing, like the CAGR of the industry, right? The way that I let that resonate with me and bring it down to like planet Earth rather than just this piece of information on a spreadsheet. Is this idea that we were able to take real estate off our balance sheet and outsource to WeWork on a monthly basis. And you know, that really helped in helping us scale up and scale down without having to carry this massive burden of a piece of real estate that we may or may not need over time. And I think the same thing applies to humans. Like, I think the company of the future, we don't necessarily need full-time employees. And I think ultimately, that's going to become pretty obvious when you have a centralized AI brain that understands what everyone does and who talks to who. And if you could imagine it like plugging into the machine of that company, I should be able to access pretty easily information on who I should get information from, what information I need to be super able to do the job that I was given. And ultimately, I think we could take human capital off our balance sheet and rent it on a basis that we need it. So I think the company of the future is going to be much simpler. You want to own your customer relationships. You want to own your intellectual property. You want to, you know, there'll be certain things that are strategic to different companies and different organizations. Like maybe you do want to own your manufacturing facility because it's strategic to the nature of the work that you do. But I think the large majority of service-based businesses don't need to own a lot of things. And, you know, they'll be much simpler, much smaller, leaner, meaner organizations.
So leaner organizations, what does that mean from that staffing perspective? It sounds like there could be some pretty significant upside if operated correctly, but how does that play out?
Yeah, I think you're going to rely on contract staffing a lot more, or outsourcing recruitment a lot more. Like to me, that is the future of how you get human capital engaged in organizations. And then the question, which we started talking about earlier, which is like, what does the future of this look like? What could good look like? It's like, well, every person on planet Earth could have like a Ari Gold sitting in their pocket helping them find jobs.
Yeah. That actually cares.
That actually cares. That represents them. That doesn't necessarily have to make 15%. I don't even know what a manager makes, but you know, whatever percentage of their salary that they make. I think that there's really a future where something like that could happen.
And you had mentioned on our previous call as well, like I think the one thing I've been talking about with peers is just the evolving value chain for staffing firms and what that's going to look like in the future and what the customers are actually going to be buying from the staffing firms. Like what, you know, there's the employment of record element, but also you brought some elements up about, you know, relationships, community. Can you just dig a little bit deeper into what you think will be of value?
Yeah, well, like EOR is just another good example of take this headache off my balance sheet.
Yep.
You deal with it. You deal with the risk. And that works. And we're seeing a lot of that. I think that as a result of some of the more administrative tasks within recruitment being done by AI, we're going to start to move into higher value work as recruiters to support our clients. So does that mean workforce planning and helping them identify who they should be hiring, where they should be hiring from? Like, I mean, imagine a world where I'm a hiring manager, I put up a role, and then, you know, my staffing firm says, well, if you change this word in the JD, we can get you the hire in a week instead of 6 weeks. And actually, it will be $30,000 cheaper if you hire a contractor in this location. Mm-hmm. And they're just as qualified for the role. So like, you know, could we start to, I think we'll be forced to, but do more strategic work in the value chain. At the same time, the noise between staffing firms and candidates is going to get louder as, you know, we continue to more and more staffing. It's like the barrier is going to continue to go down, which is going to mean that the burden for us to build better and tighter relationships with candidates is going to go up. So I believe that we're going to have to spend more time building relationships with candidates, adding value that goes beyond just potentially what job we can get them. I think that there's a lot that will change as a result of AI, but I think the challenge is I'm definitely not going to get it 100% right. And so you got to take small baby steps to kind of evolve as things evolve around you.
Yeah. And it sounds like so the shifting towards more strategic partnerships, which I think is going to be a theme as AI kind of commoditizes the labor side of it. I just think about what HR used to buy. One of the value components of a staffing firm was that you had somebody who was willing to do 100 calls a day. You know, that was it. That was like a key part of what.
Yeah. I don't think you have that anymore. I'm going to throw out another dynamic that I think is super interesting. Maybe we're not only in charge of hiring human capital. Maybe like staffing firms are in charge of hiring these agents. Because like if you think about it right now, companies, individual business units within companies are buying software that does the work or tasks of humans in some capacity when they're buying AI. There's going to be a significant amount of overlap between two technologies that two different business units buy. This is no one centralizing it. TA is not involved in that decision-making process. So therefore, you have technology that could be violating labor laws or decisions that have to be made around people as a result of this technology that I started talking about skills-based firing, you know, because this skill is no longer going to be needed in the organization. You know, so like, I think that someone's going to have to centralize that buying of AI in a way that you can kind of see the impacts it's going to have on different human capital in the organization. And then also make sure you're not paying twice for the same functionality.
That is funny to think about, like an AI, like a staffing agency that procures and manages your agents.
Yeah. And it also understands who does what well, you know, which agents can be effective where.
We're going to need something like that. That role is going to have to exist as the proliferation of agents comes. Because I think that it's right now we're just at the early stages and you're already seeing the overlap, which is crazy. So what are some of the competitive moats for your staffing agency? What would you be doubling down on right now?
It has to be the hard question that I haven't had time to operationalize my thinking around, but I'll share my thoughts, I guess, anecdotally. I think you have to start to think about how you leverage AI. This is not a game where you can sit on the sidelines and wait. You have to be in the game because your competitors will get significant efficiencies as a result of AI. The second thing is the process of having to sell to both candidates and organizations is not going away. That's the last thing that's going to get automated. So continuing to build differentiated value for your clients. I think being able to accomplish business problems for them faster, either a candidate in a seat quicker or a better quality candidate in a seat. I think, you know, these things don't go away as a result of AI. So continuing to focus on sales and building deeper relationships with candidates, yeah, it's key.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And from a tech perspective, because I know a lot of the agencies are trying to figure out where to go with budgets and what to do. I hear constantly that there's just too many options from a tech perspective, that there's too many vendors out there, too many AI choices, and I think people are kind of confused. Any guidance on, and obviously I tell them to go look at the talent tech ecosystem as a way to kind of navigate that, but any guidance in terms of how they should be thinking about or approaching their tech stack strategy?
Yeah, I mean, call me. Every company is different, right? It's really interesting. Like, I was inside one of the world's largest banks actually last week, and we were having a conversation about the head of talent's opinion was, if we buy AI and the candidates are using AI, this is just AI talking to AI. And then I have the same problem as I have now, but just at a larger scale, you know? So his kind of aha was, well, maybe I should be focusing on how I assess candidates more meaningfully and build AI and unique processes around how we assess candidates than trying to figure out how we use AI to source more candidates, because the candidates have access to this technology as well. So I thought it was just an interesting kind of reframe for me. But yeah, I think that you have to understand this dynamic of, it's not as simple as just selecting the right technology anymore. It's about selecting the right technology, doing the change management around the technology, and then really looking at the tasks that the humans you have around the technology are doing, and continuously on an ongoing basis, transforming those people. And I've been saying, instead of BAU, it's TAU, transformation as usual, so that you can optimize the process around the technologies as they evolve. And that is, becoming an organization that operates in TAU instead of BAU is a totally new muscle that has to be built.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And I feel like on the adoption of this also, I think that there's getting it down to the ground level. Have you seen anything? You know, I'd heard one organization where they said we were requiring everybody in our team to just use AI twice a day. That was like a core requirement.
Yeah. You know what I do with my team? I ask them on a weekly basis, how did you use AI this week? And what did you use it for? And they have to share it, right, with the team. And there's always someone who has a unique use case, and you learn from them.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that's it. And also puts the people know that question is going to come up, and they know that they're going to have to go around and answer it, which means that they've got to use it, which is great.
Yeah, because like my opinion, like people, it's like using Ozempic. People feel like it's cheating, right? Like, I don't think it's cheating. It's all about leveraging it to make yourself better, right? So like, as long as you're not just using it, not reading the content, not optimizing how you frame your prompt, I see no issue with it.
When people consider it cheating, I always think back to when Google first came out, and it was like, should I not Google it? Like, should I go to the library and like, do I need to know the Dewey Decimal System anymore? And it's like, it's a tool, it exists, other people are using it, and it can make you more efficient and more productive in a pretty significant way. So just a couple last questions for you. So I want to know if there's anything about AI that you just think staffing firms get wrong, or that you see businesses get wrong, any misconceptions or ideas around it that are seem off compared to what you how you see the future. I guess achievement would be a good example of one. So
no, I think it's very easy to be wowed by some buzzy cool feature that some technology has, but if you can't operationalize this into your business process, it's not going to work. And so it's super important to realize that the technology is still only as good as the people who operate it. And the amount of work you put into operationalizing it into a process that's seamless. Because if you need your people to climb a mountain to get access to this tool to leverage it, like, it ain't happening.
Yeah. The behavior change is hard.
Yeah. 100%. So I think you have to really work twice as hard at identifying the business problem first and making sure that you optimize the process around the technology or the process with the technology, and the selection is just a small piece of that.
Absolutely. Got two last questions for you, and then we'll close out with some final comments. And this kind of we call the speed round here. So the first question I've got for you is, what book or books have you given most as a gift and why?
What book or books have I given most as a gift?
Or have been most influential on your life?
Well, I absolutely love to read biographies of entrepreneurs. This is like, some people study athletes. I was never the guy that could tell you the stats of any player. I mean, I did actually, by the way, side note, write Jeremy Lin's biography and published it in 2012. Okay. But that's not because I'm an athlete or was particularly interested in sports. It was more an entrepreneurial endeavor. So I love reading biographies. I think probably Walt Disney's biography is the one that's had the biggest impact on me and, you know, something that I think everyone should read. But I've equally read Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Thomas Edison. I mean, these are just people that I look up to.
Yeah, that's amazing. The Walt Disney one is one I need to pick up. I've heard multiple people say it's incredible.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. And what habits have most changed your life in the last 1 to 3 years?
I work out every single day. That for sure has changed my life. Waking up in the morning, 5:30, going to the gym, getting my heart moving, being plugged in before anyone else is emailing me and catching up on my emails. Like, that for sure has changed my life.
Love it. This one might be kind of follow suit, but what is the best or most worthwhile investment you've ever made?
My wife.
Yeah, your wife.
Marrying my wife. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. For sure.
Love it. And with that, I want to just ask if you have any closing comments to the audience.
I'll just joke to go back to this investment one. It's definitely my wife, but like, I'm the king of buying electronic things, you know, like any new electronic I buy. And it's like 1 out of 10 of these new electronics ever actually make a meaningful impact or change in my life. And we're talking like the Apple Watch, you know, the Oura Ring, whatever the new tech thing is, like I buy it, right? But it's for that 1 out of 10 times that it changes my life this much that I have this addicted thing where I buy the next thing, you know? But yeah, none of those physical things actually.
You identify what's next too. I'm right there with you. Like, <I'm, laughs> number of paid subscriptions that I have at the end of every month. So I'm like,
embarrassing.
Gotta try it.
Totally embarrassing.
Any closing comments for the audience?
No, listen, I think this is the most exciting time to be in recruitment. I think that the opportunity is going to grow. I think that obviously change is scary, but we have an opportunity to make the things that we do have a bigger impact, start to become a more strategic part of an organization. And, you know, I think it's exciting.
I absolutely agree with that. And Jonathan, I really enjoyed having you on the show with some of the deeper, more forward-looking thoughts we've had around AI. Love the idea of the digital twin. I think it's coming. And it was great having you on. Hope you have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.